O.J. Simpson passed away, and that's really all we've got to say about it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen too many snippy quips on Twitter and such. My one excursion onto Twitter, my state-mandated single-minute excursion onto Twitter daily. Too many snips and quips and snipes and gripes, and mostly quips about O.J. Simpson having died. I'm not making any jokes about it today. Give me a couple of months, because that's how I like to do things. I will say, however, that I hope Billy Joel is rewriting We Didn't Start the Fire to include the phrase, OJ passed away. What else do I have to say? That's it.
All right.
OJ passed away. What else do I have to say? Right?
Legend that a girl who want to get a chance with her dance be cool. This is issue 334 of the Insert Credit Magazine, where I'm J. Jonah Jameson, and these three video game experts have to bring me pictures of Spider-Man before I sound a horrible buzzer. My name is Alex Jaffe, and if my life had an autosave feature, the icon in the lower right corner of the screen would be a rolling die.
The feature is what?
Autosave.
If my life had an autosave
feature. It's a rolling die.
Yeah.
I guess things are other than floppy disks at times.
You can be a floppy disk crank.
I could, but I don't want to. My name is Frank Sfaldi, and the save icon in the corner of my life's screen. You know, let's get rid of the floppy disk. Let's do some other form. You know, it's an animated thing of like a pencil on like a scroll, not a paper. And I know you don't write on a scroll with pencil, but you do in my game. And it's just like a little like pencil, like jiggling along on top of a scroll.
Pencil jiggling on a scroll. I should have rhymed that with something. I'm Tim Rogers, and I mean, this answer is very clear for me. That if I had, an auto-saving feature in my life, the corner in the lower right side of the screen, the lower right corner, would display a rotating triangle, an equilateral triangle, because it's simple as shape, and it's easy, and I've incorporated them into many things I've visually designed over the years, and I like triangles. And like equilateral triangles, and also like high frame rates. You can't have a spinning circle unless there's a little thing on it, unless there's a design on it of some sort. You know, like the Mac OS beach ball, as it's called. Nobody likes that beach ball. We don't like it.
No.
The triangle, though, high frame rate, a triangle looks real good. You get a triangle spinning at 240, 360 frames per second.
Tell me about the color and opacity of this triangle.
Oh, it would be white at 80% opacity.
All right. That's what I wanted to know. That's the news I crave.
All right. I'm Brandon Sheffield. The little icon in the right corner of my what's it would be a little looping GIF of a barking dog. Just a little dog doing little barks, and it's got three lines that come out of the mouth.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. So it's just a little, and it's kind of like a little wiggly drawing. That's what it would be. Like a little Rakugaki.
Now, there's a good reason I asked you about the color of your triangle, because my first question is, I'd like to know what you can tell about a video game based on its color scheme.
Well, you can tell whether the people making it know about colors. That sounds silly.
That's true.
But as someone who not too long ago was trying to hire for an artist to work on a video game, something that a conclusion I've kind of come to is that you can teach people all kinds of stuff. But if they don't come to you with a good color sense, you're going to be in trouble from the start. If people understand how to make colors look vibrant and interesting, or intentionally dull in a good way, or combined in a pleasant configuration, if they can't already do that, you're going to have a very difficult time. So that's one thing that you can tell from a color scheme, is what those people think about color, how much they care about it. It means a lot all by itself.
You can often tell if anyone involved with the art aspect of the game ever played a ZX Spectrum. If they come to you with concept art that's like all black background with white and red and blue on it.
Yeah, one green patch.
can usually tell what they think video games look like in general.
You can also certainly, you can get a vibe, like if you got a bunch of pastels in your Magical Drop 3 or whatever, it gives you a friendly vibe. If you got all your blacks and reds, you're like, all right, we thought of this idea in high school and there's going to be a lot of bloody stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You can think of things in high school.
One may think of things in high school.
Yeah, yes. You're allowed.
If you want to. We all may remember the era of brown video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was brown looking. Everything looked kind of like Lunch Lady Land style.
Where did that palette come from? Like, it's probably not from a video game, right? It's probably a cinematic palette that was that a video game copied and then the other games copied the copy.
I do mainly associate it with Gears of War.
Yeah, Gears of War was the kind of the standard bearer of that particular thing.
Well, there were a lot of movies around that I could, because I don't know dates, I couldn't place which came first, but there were so many movies about the various Gulf Wars that were yellow and brown. There were a lot of like apocalyptic zombie, like the Resident Evil movie that took place in the apocalypse just for one instance of the movie, and then they went away from it. That was all yellow and brown. So there was a lot of that going around in cinema at the time.
There was a sort of a color grading movement kind of going on for a little bit of a while, where everything was just a little kind of aggressively yellow. You look at movies of like the late 90s. If you think of video games as always being about 6 to 8 years behind aesthetic visual choices made in films. You know, not just visual choices, but narrative choices as well. You know, you would see some stuff that was just kind of a filter. I'm thinking of like Steven Soderbergh movies, like where out of sight, it's all orange in some scenes. And then in the Detroit scenes, there's a blue filter on everything. A lot of formative films of the late 90s would slap a filter on whole set pieces or settings. So you ended up with video games that did sort of the same thing, but in that glacially paced video gamey way, where in Gears of War, you've basically got your brown filter, your tobacco gold filter on the whole game. And it was just a shortcut to, I don't know, realism or verisimilitude or immersiveness. And you got the same thing coming. I mean, movies like Batman Begins, Dark Knight around that time, they made a couple of visual choices where stuff just kind of looked colder or warmer or than, you know, nature would or could or should. And I mean, these days we've got, if you look at color choices, if we believe video games and movies have fully become their own things at this point that are also just kind of infecting one another seemingly at random, today's problem with movies is HDR color grading that's too nuanced and too soft, right? And we all experienced a little eye strain at watching a movie these days, where it's kind of hard to tell the difference between color zones. You got to be some sort of goddamn air traffic controller of reverse color blindness in order to tell the difference between two colors on a screen. And most of these movies made by the modern colorists, it's kind of a thing.
Also, a lot of that has sort of replaced it's not in camera, but like in scene lighting.
Oh yeah,
and lighting being less of a. It's not less of a craft, but it's less forward in the mix.
Yeah,
which is a little unfortunate. I was thinking as we were talking, I wonder what it would have been like if there were a large, robust game industry in Hong Kong during the early 2000s. After the in the late 90s, people doing so much blue and green in the film industry.
Yeah,
over there, just like really just washing things with blue. Would we have gotten?
Thought experiment for another time, I suppose. Here's our next question. Which video games have the most interesting original takes on what the internet is?
Front Mission 3.
You want to expand on that?
I haven't played Front Mission 3.
And anybody who's listening who's played Front Mission 3 would know it's got an internet browser in it. You know, all of your like good tactics RPGs from throughout history. They don't just have a battle and then a story part and a battle. There's always something between, you know, it doesn't have to be a fully fleshed out hub world. In fact, it's a little best if it's not. Front Mission 3 had an internet browser you could open up. between battles, and you could read stuff, and you could send emails, and you could recruit people and learn things, and there was stuff evolving in the world at the time. It was pretty neat.
But there were no, like, avatars floating through 2B neon cyberspace.
There's the obvious Phantasy Star Online, where you had your conversation type emoji things. That was kind of a neat thing. I liked the demon network in Devil Survivor, which was basically like you had a DS that could connect locally, but it was across some sort of mysterious demon network. That was cool. And then there's your like internet isekai dot hack, which is you're inside the internet.
Yeah.
You as the real life human player are playing as a character who got caught into an in-world MMO, which is kind of a fun bunch of layers.
And did you ever play those games?
I never did. Although
I'm going to tell you what I did. So let me tell you.
What do you think?
The concept is really cool on paper, but they're you know what? I hate to do this, but those games are god darn hacky.
Dang it!
I mean, I don't want to. I hate to use this phrase, but I'm definitely past the statistical midpoint of my life, so it's time. It's time to just start laying down the law on dot hack for the PS2.
I never played those dot hacks because I was always confused about how many there were. By the time I started paying attention to it, there was like 7, because there's dot hack something 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's a dot hack something else 1, 2, 3.
You play the PS2 ones. The answer is you play the PS2 ones.
But I think there's 7 on PS2. I think
you play those first 3 in release order is what you do, because they were the ones that were released as sort of the prototype of episodic content. Yeah. You know?
And you know there's a mysterious, I don't know if it's mysterious, there's a dot hack fighting game that is only playable if you purchase the Japanese Blu-ray of the dot hack movie.
The dot hack movie.
And it's
That's really cool.
Wait, is it a console game?
Yeah. It's a complete fighting game that exists solely on a Blu-ray disc that is bid primarily as the dot hack movie. And then on the back, it's like a bonus. There's a versus fighting game, and it's on PS3 exclusive.
Is there any other video game like that exists on a movie DVD?
There are several video games. I found out about it because I was looking into this recently, and there's a bunch of them. So that you may recall the time when there were demos on PS3 games, like for example, PS3 demos on Blu-rays. So yeah. If you got the District 9 Blu-ray, you got a God of War demo for some reason that you could play on your PS3. Yeah. If you got the movie Stealth on UMD, there was an exclusive Stealth track of Wipeout Pure, whichever Wipeout was on PSP.
That's bizarre.
There's that Ranko's something day, whatever dealy. I can't remember what exactly it's called.
Oh, Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah. Rocko's Modern Life, yeah. On Rocko's Modern Life, there's a Ranko something Hime's Longest Day. Anyway, the second game from Crispies, the makers of Tokyo Jungle, is only on that disc. So in Japan, it came out as a Blu-ray, and then it came out as a Blu-ray with the game on it. And then in Europe, it came out as the game that also had the Blu-ray shorts on it. Very interesting.
Well, anyway, we sure took the most boring detour possible from me getting to mention Dragon's Dogma, but that's okay. I just want to point out I earlier said four.
Didn't like that one, Tim? Games. Didn't like hearing about this?
I mean, no, it's all right. I earlier said there were 3 dot hack games. I said the trilogy. It's not a trilogy. There's 4 of them. There are 4 dot hack games. And then there's the dot hack G. I mean, I knew
GU
that.
Once.
I played them all. Then there's dot hack GU, which is dot hack 2. The first 4 dot hacks are one game, and you can play through them.
So the problem is that the GU is so small.
Yeah.
On the package that you can really easily be like, wait, which number 2 was this? Which number 3?
It's small enough. Anyway, the best internet in a video game is actually the rift in Dragon's Dogma, which is where the pawns come from, which is a medieval internet. I mean, I'm not breaking any new ground here by proposing the theory that the rift in Dragon's Dogma is the internet, but that's what it is. Thank you.
In games where you can pick one of an assortment of guys, mm-hmm. when do you pick the big guy and when do you pick the little guy?
I pick the little guy every time. The little guy's faster.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, mostly I'm thinking of fighting games. And when I'm playing a fighting game for the first time, it's like, what is the fastest, most annoying character I can be? Right? Like, I want to jump around. I want to bounce off the edge of the screen for no reason.
Yeah, I'm always thinking, who's going to do kicks? Who's going to do good kicks?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the small, fast guy. Sometimes, though, you pick the big guy if you're like a certain kind of player in Samurai Showdown, because then you can kind of like one hit kill if you're really clever with your timing and whatnot. But you pick the big guy if you're playing tank in a Memorpica, because mm-hmm. you're absorbing the damage and pick the big guy.
Yeah.
I don't think Memorpagas have big guys, do they?
Like, sure they do.
They're all kind of in the custom character.
You can custom creator. Anything you want.
You can be kind of big, but I mean, you know, you don't have to be a big guy to be
a tank.
You don't have to be a big guy to be a tank. You can be a little guy who's a tank.
It's true. But there's I guess I'm thinking of older ones. There were archetypes of like your beefy knight.
The whole big guy slow, little guy fast thing has not 100% it's not exactly been the thing in the modern video game.
Yeah, it's an older archetype. There's actually Abigail in Street Fighter 6 is like, or 5, I guess, is very fast giant character.
Yeah. They've actually kind of flipped it on Street Fighter a while back now, yeah, where it's you get your big fast guy.
Yeah.
I usually, the first time I have a character creator, I tend to go like slide everything to the max the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I don't know if that counts as choosing the big player, but I typically do that and then am amused for about 30 seconds and then just hit the random button because I don't actually care about what my character looks like.
I really just wish they would make, Dragon's Dogma 2 was an example. I had like a whole 2 hours on my stream a couple weeks back where I was just sitting there just sad the whole time that they're asking me to make a character, because I'm like, you've got the best character designers in the history of video games working on this thing. Can't they just make one for me? Please. Like, you all made Street Fighter. Like, you've got people from there working on this. Just make me a cool, weird, generic fantasy person. That's what I want. I don't want to make it myself.
I know a lot of people specifically play these types of games for the character creator, but there should be an array of attractive default options as well.
The problem there might be the problem I had with Baldur's Gate 3, which is I'm like, oh, these are great characters. I'll just pick one of these. And then it turns out that
it's their story.
Right. You basically destroy that character existing in the story by playing as them. You no longer get to like understand that character.
Yeah, I forget if I mentioned this, but in Baldur's Gate 3, I was using that character creator, and then I was made aware that I was just making Elena from Street Fighter 3 without realizing. I was
made
like,
aware? Oh. Did they tell you that? Did they put a pop up?
Yeah, there's a little pop up.
Certain parties in the home were like, "Are you just making Elena?" And I was like,
"Clippy popped up."
Whoops.
Nothing wrong with that.
It looks like you're making a Street Fighter character. Can I help?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like an autocomplete where it just fills in the rest of it.
Anyway, when I want to do fishing, that's when I choose Big the Cat.
There you go. Ba-boom. I just received word from corporate that off the success of Helldivers switching from top down to third person, they want us to get ahead of the curve by developing a fourth-person shooter. What do we do with that?
Fourth person?
Fourth person. I could see the marketing folks from like the Rainbow Six games saying that that was fourth person because you have to control other people as well as your own character in third person. Yeah. It wouldn't really make sense, but I could see that happening.
We skipped kind of like Windows 9 here. We kind of skipped right over the second person shooter, a game where you just get shot. Which I guess any Call of Duty can be a second person shooter if you aren't good enough, if you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm talking about.
I always get shot in those.
I mean, okay, so fourth person shooter, like if somebody really, somebody came to me wanting, actually asking for a design for something like this, it would be comically easy to make an excitingly interesting game about managing like a fire teams, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like, I've got my AI bot team of Overwatch heroes versus somebody else's AI bot team of Overwatch heroes. And all I'm doing is making managerial decisions, and I have access to a bunch of different cameras I can switch to with my one through four keys. You know, you got Five Nights at Freddy's is already out there. You know,
it's almost an RTS.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you turn an FPS into an RTS, and then, you know, you make it all about camera angles and vantage points and, you know, management, basically an FPS Overwatch hero team management simulator. You know, millions and millions of dollars probably to make something like this, but I don't know, it's not what I exactly want to do with my life, but I could do it if anybody listening has, you know, a hundred mil, something like that. I'd be bored, but I could do it. 5 years.
So is it third person shooter? Was that the specific
fourth person shooter?
Okay.
Yeah,
we would market this as a fourth person shooter. It would even be called fourth person would be the name of the game.
The fourth person.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fourth person is the woke sequel to The Third Man.
Instead of The Third Man.
We're halfway to the seventh guest.
Oh, no, the woke sequel. Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, fourth person shooter.
All right, well, now that's what the game is.
Wait, why are they called third person shooters? That's so woke. Shouldn't it be called third man shooters? Right?
Right.
Well, what still, when you get an extra life, you get a free man. So we still have that.
No, that's true. Yeah. Not for long.
I've never said that. Did any of you ever actually use that phrase?
No. What, third man?
A free man.
Oh, free man.
Other people did around me, but not me.
I've lived all over this god darn country. I've heard free man. I've heard free guy. But for me, I've heard one up. For me, it's always been extra life.
Extra life.
100% of the time.
But I've heard it all four ways somewhat equally. Yeah.
It took me so long to realize that that dumb free guy movie was like a joke about one ups. Extra lives. I actually didn't know because I had never heard that before. No.
Is it regional, Tim? Is there a part of the country that free man is said more frequently?
Well, I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm from, in case anyone here was unclear about this, I am from United States military installations is where I'm from. I grew up on military bases. Yeah. So, you know, before they join the military, people are from a place, right? Generally. And then they get married, have children while joined the military. So children have their parents' as regional accents. I don't know how it happens, but you end up with stuff intermingled. Uh-huh. I had kids calling things boards, kids calling stuff levels, stages. We had board, level, and stage, right? Like kids being like, I can't get past the eighth board of Super Mario. Like, what? It's a board. They're calling it a board. Like
That's got to be from... like Chicago area, right? Because of arcade penetration, you would think.
Midway and such. Yeah. Yeah. There's
I don't know that people like played arcade games more in Chicago than anywhere else. You know,
they made them,
which is, but I feel like the parlance would leak into society.
Maybe. Yeah. But like if you read old video game magazines, it's boards, like the 80s ones. So it's just coming from coming from your frame of reference for video games being Pac-Man.
Video games and computer entertainment called them boards, I believe, all the way up into the late NES era.
So. Andy Eddy might still be doing that right now.
Yeah, you know what? More god darn God bless to him, you know? Right?
Yeah.
I agree. I like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember reading Andy Eddy as a child.
I saw him months ago. I still see
last word on fourth person shooters.
Oh, last word is that I knew a guy in my adult life who said I won a game, meaning he beat it.
Oh, yeah, which game do you know?
Geist Force.
Geist Force.
Wow.
Oh, Geist. Geist Force was the unreleased Dreamcast games. I meant Geist on.
I thought we were about to start talking about Geist Crusher up in here.
And the reason I remember that is because this person's last name, and Brandon might know who I'm talking about now, was Geist.
Oh yeah.
Oh, so he needed to play the game because he was tired of of extremely beautiful women approaching him at social engagements, and when who upon learning his last name started immediately gushing about the video game Geist. Is that what it was? And he needed to make sure he knew. Oh, Geist!
Yeah,
like the video game. And now he's got to talk to supermodels about this video game he's never played.
Yeah, embarrassing. Yeah.
Sweat and bullets.
I gotta win this game.
I gotta win Geist.
Is there a video game called Sweating Bullets?
There should be.
Well, there's a Megadeth song.
You keep talking. I'll look it up.
Yeah, we're going to quickly develop the game Sweating Bullets during this break.
Oh, is it break time? Okay, well, there's nothing called Sweating Bullets.
Oh, well.
I'm going to go sweat some bullets into the toilet.
Yee-hoo-ha.
Nice.
Oh, my God.
Kaboom. Welcome back. To insert credit, it's time for us to spelunk once more into Carl's Bad Cavern. This is the part of the show where if you're a subscriber to patreon.com/insertcredit, like so many kind individuals, you can get access to a forum that allows you to send us your questions. You also get monthly bonus episodes and other neat surprises. This week's question comes from Rose, who asks, what would the ideal starting lineup be for the Dreamcast 2?
Starting lineup.
They would just literally make Sonic Adventure 3, dude, and they would call it Sonic Adventure 3.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh, starting lineup means like the...
It means the launch lineup. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, in some parts of the country, they call it a starting lineup. Starting lineup. It's where the same place they call levels boards.
The launch games are called the starting lineup, yeah.
In Sega City, interestingly, they call levels zones. Mm-hmm, that's a Sonic the Hedgehog reference.
Sagacity.
Thank you. They call them
okay, zones. What are the launch titles for the Dreamcast 2?
Dreamcast 2. So
Sonic Adventure 3.
I think here's a question first. Are we presuming Dreamcast 2 comes out now or came out in like 2005? Now?
Good question. The question specified now as opposed now. To
that's good. That's
historically.
Good.
All right, so a Yakuza game, a Like a Dragon game will absolutely be one of the launch games, and they'll delay the release of the Dreamcast 2 to accommodate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes
there
sense.
There is definitely an Outrun and or Crazy Taxi, one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
But they gotta have something new going on though. It's gotta be a little gimmicky.
I think there's gonna be a couple of like sequels to legendary old games that are just not good. Like there would be like a new Jet Set Radio that's like really not good.
Yeah.
I know they're making a new Jet Set Radio now. We don't need to talk about that.
They could make another Altered Beast that's not very good.
Mm. Yeah.
I love that.
Another 3D Shinobi that's not very good, except they'll all actually be great if you're chill.
Yeah.
They'll all be really good. I want to think that knowing that Sega kind of sucks, I think, no offense to them, that they kind of suck at making hardware, right? We love the Yakuza games, et cetera, et cetera. I think that they would go like the Nights into Dreams direction and not have a Sonic right away and then possibly never have a Sonic on the Dreamcast 2.
Oh, so it's the Saturn 2.
Yeah, yeah. So it would basically, the Dreamcast 2 would be the Saturn 2 as well. So I feel like they would make a game that was an original IP that they then at the last minute make connected to the Sonic universe. And I'm thinking the game would be called Emerald Hills. Is the name of the game. They would connect to the Sonic universe, but it would be like a human character living in this Sonic-like world where they very quickly Sonicify the game. Thinking like a Shigeru Miyamoto putting Star Fox into Dinosaur Planet sort of situation is the game that for some reason sprang to mind. And it's just an over-ambitious action adventure RPG sort of Horizon Zero Dawn style video game that's got too much stuff in the pot.
Two things. But one, by that token, maybe instead of a Yakuza game, they'll have a Rent-A-Hero game.
Yeah.
I like this.
Try to bring that back. And then my other thinking is that they'll still have a chip on their shoulder from when they felt like a lot of the things Nintendo did with the Wii were just things that they had started with the Dreamcast, like the motion control in the fishing controller. And so they'll be like dead set on having a peripheral that's like weird. I think they'll try to bring back typing of the dead with a foolishness.
No, I mean, I'm thinking light gun games. They're going to go straight. They're going to be like, try to have the ultimate luxurious light gun game experience. Because, you know, the Ghost Squad and whatever for the Wii, that game was cool, right?
It's true.
Should the Wii not have LA been a golden age of light gun games?
Should have been.
What happened there? We didn't technically have it.
I worked on a light gun game for the Wii called Wicked Monsters Blast. The problem was you had to have these big plastic pieces of crap to slot the Wiimote in to make it feel.
Was this a Wii game or was this a Malaysian VHS tape? Like,
it was made in Thailand, Tim. So.
Oh, that rules, man!
Yeah,
that's good. That's good.
Yeah,
that's even better. A Malaysian VHS tape.
Yep.
So I think they're going to have like a new original IP that's just not cool at all, like a new platform hero.
Sure.
I think it's
a light gun
Buckets.
Hero.
No, Billy Buckets.
Billy
and he attacks things with his bucket. And he can throw the bucket at a wall and like catch it on his head and then like buckets on his head. But when he does that, he panics and runs back and forth, and he's invincible when he does that.
You know who's going to be in charge of this project? They're bringing Yuji Naka out of jail.
Yeah,
he's going to direct Billy Buckets.
He's going to have two ankle bracelets and two wrist bracelets, and he's going to have a battle royale collar around his neck.
Yeah.
He's only allowed to go between his house and the Sega of Japan.
As soon as he thinks about insider trading, his head blows up.
Yeah, he's been enlisted by Amanda Waller for the Suicide Squad to develop this one game.
Oh man, I love it.
Yu Suzuki is going to come back to fully develop the world of Air Twister into a full reactivized entertainment game.
Yeah, I'd do it. Air Twister's cool.
I'd play these.
I don't like the music in Air Twister. The music was a huge turnoff.
It was funny in the trailer.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, extent of the usefulness for this music.
I wish I could remember the incredibly hilarious. Matthew Kumar was in the home today, not today, earlier in the month. He was talking about that soundtrack, and he was like, it was basically, she's a chiller bean.
Yeah, very good.
Very good, and very true.
Very good. God, I was listening to Queen the other day, and it was making me want to just play the game Unicorn Overlord, which is interesting because that's not Ogre Battle. Ogre Battle, which has all the Queen references in it.
Yeah.
And it's not even really that close, but it's close enough that listening to Queen made me want to return to Unicorn Overlord. Is Unicorn Overlord the best Vanillaware game in years? Yes. Next question.
I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm ready to believe.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
I'll be
just as long
year.
As you don't, you know, don't pop any popcorn for the story cutscenes.
Yeah.
Don't have any popcorn or beverages ready. Just have a bottle of water. It's all about the tactics.
Got it.
Who is the most famous person that you think could beat you at Street Fighter? Famous for playing video games doesn't count.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she could do anything.
Jamie Lee Curtis actually has competed in Evo.
Oh. That might be the canonical answer.
It's true. Yeah, she was there at the one time we went. She was in cosplay.
Oh,
yeah, I knew she cosplayed. I didn't know she was a Street Fighter too.
Jamie Lee Curtis being in cosplay.
I knew that, but I didn't know she played Street Fighter competitively.
I mean, not particularly super well, probably. Okay. I mean, I don't think she didn't win. She, I don't recall her singer unmasking herself.
I'm gonna
on stage.
I'm going to guess Lil Nas X can beat me in Street
that's
Fighter.
That's a good one.
I think.
I'm really bad at Street Fighter. Do I have to answer this? I mean, a lot of famous people, probably.
Choose someone fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Who would you like to beat you in Street Fighter, Frank?
I don't know that's not a kink I have.
Well, but you get to hang out with them for a minute and be like, oh, good game.
The most famous person who could beat you in Street. This is a very complex. This is the question itself kind of becomes the conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here.
So that's fun.
I kind of designed it that way. Thank you.
Yeah. I feel like if it was the 90s, basically anybody in hip hop would be the answer because I feel like there were a lot of folks playing Street Fighter at that time.
You know who couldn't beat me at Street Fighter?
Who's that?
OJ Simpson.
Yeah, he's not alive.
No, not now. Maybe in the 90s.
Maybe at Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
He comes from the demon realm or whatever happens in Mortal Kombat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that and, you know, the, like, extremely grisly, like, bloody murders that happen in those games.
Yeah.
I had a thought that if you played Street Fighter against Serena Williams, it would take her, like, 2 minutes to realize how the game works, and then she would instantly be better than you.
That's probably true.
Could be a thing, yeah.
I like this.
People who are just good at stuff are out there.
Should probably be even better at Virtua Fighter.
That's a really good one. Like, just being beaten by Serena Williams sounds like a pretty good time.
Yeah.
BWSW.
I thought you said you didn't have that kink.
I don't know. I guess maybe I do.
BWSW. I'm helping Frank discover himself right now.
I think I might now.
Let's talk about who we'd like to kill us. Who do you want to kill, you, Frank? Who would you let commit? Who would you let commit a Mortal Kombat fatality? What celebrity?
I got to go Serena, guys. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. Brandon, what celebrity would you like to commit a Mortal Kombat fatality on you IRL, ending your mortal life?
Maybe Michelle Yeoh, because she'd do a really impressive, like, very long kick and my head would just pop right off.
Oh, that's really good.
Just rocket into space.
Could be good. Okay, how about you, Alex Jaffe?
I have a question. Is this in public? And can the person who kills me be convicted for murder?
You're on death row and it's on TV. So, I mean,
so this is a state sponsored execution.
Yeah.
So they're getting paid to kill me or they're granting a make-a-wish.
I heard that they got rid of the last meal rule.
Yeah.
That's a joke. I don't know if that's true. It's kind of like the guy, the inventor of Segway rolling off of a cliff or the inventor of the Atkins diet dying of a massive heart attack. I don't know if it's true that they got rid of the last meal. They got rid of last meals, but they do let you choose your celebrity executioner. It is the year 2028. Jaffe, you're on death row for podcasting. What celebrity do you get to kill? And celebrity has no choice. They have to do it.
I'm going to say John Cena. Because he'd be really nice about it. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a very comforting final few moments.
You might get suplexed.
He'd be particularly apologetic. Would you want him to punch you?
Dealer's choice, man. He's the pro.
But you might ruin John Cena's life by doing so.
That's the direction I'm going. Yeah. Whose life can I ruin by legally obligating them to murder me on television?
So
yeah.
Frank, how would you want Serena Williams to punch you in the heart? Is that
I don't want to ruin her life anymore.
Okay, so that's interesting.
That's where I'm going. I hadn't considered the, you know,
okay,
the,
well,
the
let's,
ramifications let's, of, yeah. of this.
I think Michelle Yeoh has already killed. Oh, so yeah.
Let's assume this is like a shake and bake clone where they make a clone of the person, has all of their memories, and then it turns into jello and falls through.
Oh, that's
through
not as appealing anymore.
Yeah,
I want it to be the actual
it
person.
It looks really real to you, and you don't know.
So it was just for me.
I'd know.
You don't know that it's not the real person, but it's so realistic.
Well, then in that case, I would still want to ruin someone's life.
And it's sponsored by Shake and Bake. Have to say to make sure it's a Shake and Bake.
Are they wearing a Shake and Bake shirt?
Shake and Bake brand clone. Mine is, I would want Sheena Ringo to shoot me in the stomach with a small pistol.
That's right.
That's what I would want.
You want to die?
Yeah. I'm going to get shot in the stomach with a small pistol, a vest pocket.
That's hard.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
A vest pocket, I think, would be the gun I would choose. And then I would just stand there. Well, I would be on the ground. That's what I would want. Yeah. The crowd goes wild.
Woo! And then she sings a little song. Sounds a little something like this.
No song. I'm not hiring. We're not, you know.
No, she might be so overjoyed.
She gets enough of that from everybody else.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Here's a question from my personal dirt bag. A question that's been lingering in the maybe I'll ask this someday file I've got. What is the drinking a caffeinated beverage right after taking a melatonin of video games?
Well, I can't take either of those, so I'm going to have to do some workshopping here. But we're talking about slowing down and speeding up at the same time is what we're talking
about. Just to see which wins.
Yeah. Interesting. Is it possibly, this sounds miserable, but so does taking a melatonin and caffeine. Is it possibly playing a game on your phone, like doing your dailies on your phone while a cutscene is happening in a game that's on your big screen?
Yeah, maybe, because it's hard to do two things at the same time in a video game that counterbalance each. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm having a tough time with this.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether to ask it, so yeah, here it is. I lay this before you.
I feel like doing your dailies in a gacha game while you're watching like the cutscenes of The Last of Us Part 2, diminishing one in favor of the other to sort of see what can command your full attention, but the answer will be neither, and you'll be dissatisfied with the experience, which I think is the ultimate result.
Yeah, that's what I want here.
Yeah, something like
dissatisfaction.
That.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I think it'd just be regular style. I mean, just basically turn it on a video game for fun and playing it. I think it's
and then
basically
not have
the,
fun.
It's the same thing. I mean, how much caffeine are we talking about, and what's the milligrammage of the melatonin?
Because that's a good question.
These things matter.
I think the spirit of the question is, it is enough to affect you.
Is it a cup
in both directions?
Not, yeah.
A cup of coffee and 10 milligrams, 5 milligrams, something like that? Because, I mean, I got to say, it just seems kind of regular.
You know, here's one thing that came to mind is there was a time where a lot of companies, especially French ones, wanted to do things on the DS or other platforms where there's like two guys and one's on the top of a platform and one's on the bottom of the platform and you have to do things with both of them to make them get through a level. And it's never been fun, but people keep trying to do it. I feel like that's kind of in the zone for me, like just playing one of those.
I think the full answer to this question is hundreds and hundreds of unfinished, unreleased Nintendo DS games is the answer.
Oh, yeah.
Nintendo DS games that the designers just couldn't crack it. They couldn't crack through the pachydermis outer layer of how do you make this fun? And then they just move on to, you know, other prototypes.
Yeah. Yeah. Henry Hatworth was a game that did come out. It was a platformer and a puzzle game.
Wow. Yeah, that did exist.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you had to play them both simultaneously. And it was like, oh man, I don't know if I like either of these
Henry
things.
Hatworth. Yeah. I think I prefer Hermy Hopperhead, to be honest.
What is a hat word?
I'm a Billy Buckets guy.
Billy Buckets. What about Billy Hatcher? You ever chilled
with him? Oh, yeah. I have chilled with Billy Hatcher.
He does hatch those eggs, or does he? Does he ever hatch the eggs? I didn't play it long enough to find out.
God, can you imagine Dreamcast 2, like Super Monkey Ball Act Zero, and it's like an Unreal Engine 3 looking like disgusting chimpanzee in chains inside of a plexiglass ball? Like a disgusting oatmeal skinned chimpanzee. Oh,
and it's got like feces on it, like very, very clearly. Yeah.
A huge turd in one hand, a huge banana in the other, a turd stained banana.
Still revving up my engine here. I'm still, still haven't cracked the seal, but I'm still getting ready to say that Bomberman Act Zero is actually pretty good. Still haven't played it.
Not yet.
No.
About 15, 20 years.
I busted that seal a while back, and it comes up all the time still in discourse. You see people bring up Bomberman Act Zero, and it's like, Bomberman was a grim sci-fi game, dude. Look at the box art of the original Famicom version. It was always had a grim sci-fi veneer. You're a robot slave attempting to break out of an underworld. Like, I mean, it was always there, man.
Yeah.
Leave Bomberman Act Zero alone. It's a pretty decent video game, actually. I played it. Whatever.
I'm going to give it a shot. One of these years, it's happening.
Oh, fire it up. Just plug it in. Smoke it. I don't want to like spoil anything, but we're on episode 334 here. We're about 26 episodes away from hearing a lot from me about Bomberman Act Zero. So
nice. Get excited.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
You know, in summary, the Xbox 360 was the Dreamcast too. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Come on.
Well,
right.
The Xbox kind of was, and then it was the 360.
The 360 was absolutely the Dreamcast 2. The Xbox was Dreamcast 1.5.
Indeed.
I think Gun Valkyrie can be explained in no more certain terms than Dreamcast 1.5.
100%, yeah.
Okay. I think it's time for us to go to our lightning round. I'm making good on a promise. A few weeks ago, we did a thing where we tried to associate every single video game console with a particular genre or flavor of video games.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to repost that list in the chat. I'm not letting any of us leave until we add 5 new consoles to this list.
Consoles. console
or systems, as it were. Some people call them consoles. Some people call them systems. Depends where you're from.
Yeah.
So how about Nintendo Wii U? How's that?
So definitive like genres.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the Nintendo Wii U?
I think it's down ports from the other systems with stuff tacked on.
Yeah.
Future Switch games.
Future Switch games. That's a pretty fun. It's not a
Switch,
genre.
Nintendo but. Switch prototypes. Yeah.
Yeah, Switch prototypes. Yeah, I guess that's...
I mean, the Wii U has the most Zelda games on it, and I think Zelda's a genre.
Yeah.
Does it have the most Zelda games on it? It's got, it's got Breath of the Wild on it, but Breath of the Wild is obviously a Switch game, much like Twilight Princess is obviously a Nintendo Wii game, despite also being on the GameCube. We've got the remake of Twilight Princess, the remaster of Twilight Princess, the remaster of Wind Waker, and the pre-master of Breath of the Wild. I don't know. The Wii is the Wii U of this Zelda console. Future Switch games. That's good.
The Switch itself isn't on this list yet.
That's good. Oh, PlayStation 5. I know what the PlayStation 5 is. You ready?
Yeah.
Is everybody ready? PlayStation 5 is Spider-Man. I crunched all the numbers on all the exclusive PS5 games, and it's Spider-Man. That's it.
It's Spider-Man.
That's the PS5. It's Spider-Man. I don't know what else it is. They have a remaster of a PS4 Spider-Man. They got Miles Morales and they got Spider-Man 2.
That's it.
And then Horizon Forbidden West is just another Spider-Man. And God of War Ragnarok. I thought I was going to say God of War Valhalla, but that's Assassin's Creed. It's basically Spider-Man, but you can't swing on webs. Last of Us 2 Remastered, Spider-Man, but you can't swing on webs. And also there's no New York. You see what I'm saying. It's all Spider-Man.
I do. It's the Spider-Man box.
I got a quick one. Neo Geo Pocket Color. Tiny Fighting.
Good.
Yep.
God, I can't believe the PS3's got no games.
Sega Master System. What is that? Brazil?
What's that?
No. The genre? No, it's not. But it is. It's like a different kind of platformer. It's like you're. It's more of an Alex Kidd than.
I think of the platformers as being very stiff. They're stiff platformers.
It's stiff.
But I like don't know stiff if that's platformer. The genre.
Platformers.
There was a lot of stuff on there. I mean, they're still selling that.
Wait, on what console are we talking about?
Master System.
The Master System.
Oh, yeah, that's not a good one.
Doesn't have a huge character to me, but I do think platformers are in
there. I think
there.
It's stiff platformer.
Yeah. Right. Slatformer.
It's like it's like video games to give your European kid brother for his fourth birthday. It's like what... Like, if you, for some reason, your kid brother's European and you're not.
Right, and it's like they're not ready for Nintendo. Like, that would just destroy their brain.
The doctor said...
Get them into it slowly.
The doctor said Nintendo would kill him. So we got him, we got him Alex Kidd.
Yeah.
He's a little bit confused, but he understands the basics. I'm trying to do, like, a really old, like, 80s console other than 2600, and they're all the same. You know what? Fine. You know what? Like... All the early 80s consoles can be the same as the 2600, right? So,
yeah.
Atari 5200, Coleco. 80s arcade. ColecoVision, 80s arcade, right?
Intellivision actually feels a little different.
Intellivision is like weird experiments with limited hardware, but I don't know how to define
it. I don't know how to quantify that. The Intellivision is like...
Utopia had like that D&D game that was kind of roguelike.
The Intellivision is Pong for swingers. Let's face it. Let's just call it what it is, okay? You ever met a person who with fond memories of the Intellivision? You know what's going on with those guys. You know what their fond memories are.
Yeah.
These California guys wearing leather pants at age 65 or whatever. You know who I'm talking about. Not a specific person. I'm talking about a guy I met at a hackerspace once. I was there because I was promised money. That's Intellivision, okay? I mentioned liking video games. The guy was some sort of an investor. He said, I used to have an Intellivision. True story. It's the end of my story.
What about the Xbox? The pre-Xbox 360 Xbox, the first Xbox.
That's a Dreamcast 1.5.
Halo.
It is Halo.
Actually, what I think of is PS2, but better graphics.
That's true, also. Yeah. Yep.
Well, so, what's the PS2? Third-person action adventure?
Yeah, I do think FPS with Xbox, but that really is truly because of Halo and not really anything else.
Halo and Halo Killers.
Yeah. Halo's a darn tootin' good one.
Well, it's true. It's true.
I think we need one more.
One more?
All right.
Okay, we got all the PSs. We got the Xboxes that count.
We got PlayStation Portable. What about that?
Well, we can do Xbox One. It's a computer.
X-Bozone?
Yeah. It's Game Pass is what it is. It's Game Pass.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Xbox One.
Yeah, I like that, too. Yeah.
What about Xbox One X, though?
It's also Game Pass.
Yeah.
I don't know about Game Pass. Game Pass ain't
Game
a genre.
Game Pass and HDR.
Game Pass ain't a genre. I don't really think... I think Xbox One is the exact point where consoles stop having identity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny to say the PS5 is Spider-Man. The PS4 definitely had a genre identity, but...
Well, I think Game Pass is the same thing as Spider-Man. It's like, I don't know, this is what you think of. Like, there's no identity here. It's just whatever's on Game Pass.
Load something up, see what's in your bong. Just light it and smoke it.
Yeah.
Just set your whole bong on fire.
We flopped into the bong today.
I'm happy putting Game Pass there.
Are we going to remember what Slatformer on this list means next time?
No.
No.
Stiff.
No. That's part of why I want to keep it that way.
All right. It's Slatformer, Jaffe. Right. Stiff.
I like
platformer.
Slatformer, but fine.
No, that's wrong. Slatformer is maximally funny because it's three consonants in a row. It's all about anybody out there who's like world building for a fantasy novel series. Try putting three consonants in a row sometimes.
Yeah, it's short for St. Louis Platformer.
I'm not talking CHs, THs. Those are just one consonant. They would have been in the old days anyway. Back, you know, before movable type, they would have been, we would have combined those. Let's try putting three consonants in a row. Give it a shot.
Okay. Is that your recommendation for this week? Putting three consonants in a row?
No. Stop. Yeah. No. Forget that.
Okay. Maybe it's time to give our recommendations.
Maybe it is time. Okay. Well, I'm going to start off with the traditional apology tour.
Oh, yeah. God. Here we go. Everybody's favorite segment.
Oh, yeah. Lord. So I was baking those dog treats that I mentioned a while ago. And I mentioned to certain parties that live in the house that mine always come out different and weird. Why are mine always puffy, cake-like dog treats? And the ones that this other person makes are more like little dog cookies.
Cake-like dog treats.
And through various conversation confusions, it was revealed that despite the recipe always having said 1 cup of flour, in actuality, it was a half cup of flour. And that so now that I have imparted to you this dog treat recipe, I feel that I have to update it to be the correct half a cup of flour, one egg,
half a cup of flour,
half a cup of a wet ingredient such as pumpkin or yogurt or something, and then a sixth of a cup of peanut butter, and also all of your dog treat dust from whatever other dog treats you have. So that's that.
I got two little dogs. What were basically manufactured in a clean room for building CPUs, so they can't have any flour. So,
oh yeah,
anything gluten adjacent, they can't consume.
That's too bad for them, little guys.
They're little microchips, these dogs.
And then I'm going to recommend somewhere. I think it was maybe on the forums. I shared a Klaus Nomi thing, and someone mentioned that they couldn't unsee it. Or whatever. And I said, good, because Klaus Nomi's cool. And so I'm going to recommend to everybody, if you want to see a weird Pierrot-like German person sing some virtuosic nonsense, check out Klaus Nomi singing Cold Song live. If you want to hear the range of a human voice, check that out. It's pretty cool and neat to see. Check that out on your YouTubes. That's what I got. I got one more, but it needs more research. So I'll get back to you later next week.
Or you could do it right now and prepare the apology segment.
I could. Okay, well, there's a band called Trencher from Oakland. They're kind of like a thrash crossover band reminiscent of Morbid Saint. True metal persons will be aware of that. The problem is there's about 15 other bands called Trencher, and I don't remember. I don't know how to tell you to find this one. Wait, it's a trenchmetal.bandcamp.com. There you got your Trencher. They only have 3 songs. They're very new, but they're pretty good. Give them a shot.
All right.
Until you find out anything else about them.
Yeah. 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 Hopefully they're cool. They're from here. They better be cool.
See, I thought the research was like, I don't know if they're racist.
No,
like, yeah, we haven't gotten there yet.
It wasn't that. But that is the traditional query, especially with black metal bands, which this is not one of. But with a lot of metal groups, I remember growing up as a young person and being like, I like this music, and so they must have the same ideology as me. And that turned out to not be true a lot of the time.
I found out later.
Someday you're going to learn that you don't know anything about anybody.
Indeed.
It's kind of like when I was young and I thought attractive people were smart.
Right. Yeah.
Like, well, they figured something out because look at them.
But it's, I will say that it's very funny in the reverse when you get your conservatives trying to play Rage Against the Machine at their shows, and then because they think that they miss the whole part about how that won't do what you tell me thing is about cops.
Like, they think it's about big government.
Yeah, they think it's about,
I think
big
a lot
government.
Of them think it's about mom and vegetables.
For sure they do.
Yeah, that's fair. Frank, you got one?
God darn, guys.
Oh, now that the recipe's been improved, I recommend eating Brandon's dog treats.
Sure.
Yeah. Eat them up.
The dust really comes through now. Yeah.
To be clear, does this...
Daddy's dusters.
Is this like to turn them into human food? I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Thank you. So what I would recommend everyone do this week is, you know, I've watched a few Netflix shows this year. And I've enjoyed some aspect of all of them, but none so much as this latest Netflix show that I watched this week, which is called Ripley, which is based on the novel The Talented Mr. Ripley. Can we just say Netflix is the new Tubi, basically, in terms of they've done it somehow. They've turned themselves into the replacement for the cheap replacement of themselves, and they charge more money for it than they did before. It's incredible. This Ripley show. If you're a fan of the 1999 motion picture, The Talented Mr. Ripley, starring Matt Damon and Jude Law, and or a fan of the Patricia Highsmith novels, known collectively as the Ripley ad, which I believe is The Talented Mr. Ripley, Ripley Underground, Ripley's Game, The Boy Who Followed Ripley, and Ripley Underwater. That's all five of them off the top of my head. That's proof that I've read them.
Whoa!
It's proof that I've read them. I read them in high school. Big fan of those books. Real big fan of those books. If you've never seen the film The American Friend by Wim Wenders, that's also one of my favorite films, if you want to watch that. As is the film Ripley's Game, starring John Malkovich, another one of my top favorite films. The Talented Mr. Ripley, not necessarily in the group of my favorite films of all time. I enjoy it. But this Ripley show on Netflix, if you are, for example, a child... First of all, I know we have a lot of child listeners, Brandon's friends and such. I'm kidding. We have a lot of child listeners.
I don't really even know what that would... I don't know if I should be insulted. It's like, it doesn't really...
Brandon's cousins and nephews and nieces all listen to the show. That's the half the listenership. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I don't even know if Brandon has any nephews, and I don't care. I don't care. I have nephews. Whatever. Who cares? It doesn't matter. I've got two nephews. Who cares?
Right? They listen to the show?
No, they wouldn't be. Actually, one of them called me just yesterday and just to tell me he wouldn't be caught dead listening to this show.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, do you even know about it? No, he said. And then he hung up.
I think only one of us has a relative who listens to the show, and that's my mom.
Yeah.
So, hi, mom.
That's pretty good.
My mom used to, but she bounced, man. I don't know what happened.
My mom thinks I'm dead. But anyway, this Ripley show, if you're a child and you're considering a career in film and you've seen... Marvel movies, you've seen, okay, I hate to invoke this phrase, but you've seen some recent Oscar winners. You may have developed this concept in your mind that a movie, in order to be cinematic, has to be the ultra widest, ugliest aspect ratio and have the most absolutely vacant, like Walmart store brand composition, with just stuff like huge, empty, vast negative spaces, and the actor all the way on the right side of the screen to let you know they're looking at the person who in the next cut is on the left side of the screen. Like there's just a lot that drives me completely insane with, I'm going to go ahead and invoke this phrase, post-Marvel, the film composition, staging, blocking. I know what all these words mean, but right now I'm just saying them because I want to say, if you don't know, and you want to learn a faster way than getting a textbook and memorizing the glossary, a faster way to learn how to make something look good is to watch this Ripley show. where it is pound for pound, ounce for ounce, frame for frame, the best looking goddamn new thing I've seen in a very, very long time. I don't speak much about cinematography on here because this is a video game podcast for children. For children who would rather play video games than enjoy cinema. But if you want to see something...
Then talk to Uncle Brandon.
Yeah.
This is something I've had to explain to people many times during my life. You don't have to like it, you know? You don't have to be the world's biggest fan of this thing, but just watch it and just know this is what stuff can look like. I don't know. You watch the first 30 minutes of the first episode and you know, if you don't want to watch the whole show, I watched the whole show because I'm a freak. And I loved it for what it was. If you can watch the first three episodes, episode three has some of the most just a gut blasting filmmaking I've ever seen. And it's something I put on at night after finishing my work before going to bed. And I'm like, I'm here to consume like I did with The Gentleman and Three Body Problem. I'm here to just drink it down like a bottle of Gatorade, you know, guzzle it, turn it into night pee, right? Is what I'm here to do with this thing. And instead I'm getting goddamn gut blasted by some of the best looking stuff I've ever seen.
I have the first episode open in my browser right now, and Netflix has this thing where if you hover over the play bar, you can see little thumbnails, and just like every still I randomly land on looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
I would also recommend that Green Frontier show that I mentioned a while ago as a very, very good cinematographical experience. It really looks good. It's cool. And nobody watched it. So you should definitely watch Green Frontier. No, nobody goddamn watched that cool magical realism True Detective with a lady show set in the Amazon.
And there was another magical realism True Detective with a lady show that... that aired recently. I can't remember what it was called.
It was called True Detective. But that was a lot later than this one.
Oh man, I hate to say this, but it was real bad.
Yeah,
did you watch it, Brandon?
Nah, I didn't.
I was so sad.
They burned me so hard on that second season. People keep saying go back to it, and I just couldn't. I haven't.
Watch the third season.
I like the third season.
Watch the third. The third is good. It's got Mahershala Ali and Stephen Dorff.
I purchased 1 month of Netflix so that I could watch Physical 100 and some other.
Stupid.
It is stupid, but I need shows to watch during my food time, and that's a great one.
Check out that Ripley if you're around, if you still got it.
The Ripley is something that has caused me an incredibly stupid confusion because I had been watching through all the Alien films.
Uh-huh.
And Netflix keeps advertising me this Ripley with just like a very dark background and the solo character. And I'm like, is this an Aliens thing? Every time I see it, I'm like, is this Aliens?
I can't tell the difference between Ripley, Ridley, Ripley's Believe It or Not, Ellen Ripley, from the show Ellen. I get confused all the time. But no, the Ripley show also is very, very horror branded.
Yeah, I noticed that.
If you're a friend of the books, as I am, you know there's... So, okay, first of all, it blows my mind. I scroll down Instagram and I keep getting ads for the Ripley show and I keep clicking on the comments and the comments make me want to just rip my brain out the top of my head, hair and all, because it's like, the comments are like, didn't they just make a movie of this? And it's like, Matt Damon and Jude Law's The Talented Mr. Ripley, directed by Academy Award
winner Anthony
Mangella, was 25 years ago, dude. 25 years ago. I think it's okay to do it again. I think it's fine to do it again. They missed a lot of stuff. You know what? They missed a lot of the gay stuff that has been very thoughtfully, you know, I mean, that's saying something too. It's been very thoughtfully reincorporated back into the story. And this TV show puts it all, laser focuses it back in there. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
I've got some recommendations of my own that I'd like to get to right now.
Netflix?
I haven't seen
Ripley?
It yet. Oh. I haven't seen it yet, but I might get around to it. I'm intrigued. If you enjoyed this episode of Insert Credit, or any episode, please rate and review our show wherever and however you can. Like Key Gray, who said, changed my brain, squad-a-la. You could also support us on patreon.com/insertcredit to pay everybody involved in this show with one exception. If you'd like to sponsor our show with an advertisement or a personal message, I'm taking those. Email me at show@insertcredit.com and we'll talk. We're not entertaining any AI-based sponsors. So if you're one of those guys,
good luck.
Good luck. You can also join our community at forums.insertcredit.com, newly refurbished. It's beautiful. Find videos of these episodes with specially curated visuals to enhance your experience on youtube.com/insertcreditshow. This episode is edited by Esper Quinn, with music, as always, by Kurt Feldman. I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Spalding.
I'm Tim Rogers.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
And the winner of this episode was Frank. Congratulations.
Why not? Wow.
Yeah.
Been a while since I knew who the winner was.
Yeah.
Why the heck not?
Well, that's exciting.
I've decided to start announcing that at the end as my new sign off.
Great. Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good.